This is the North Africa Journal, and thank you for downloading this podcast. For more podcast information and user rules, please visit north-africa.com/podcast.
Today, we probably should have a quick discussion on Western Europe, essentially, and the changes that are happening in Europe. Should we worry that the weakness and the changes that we're seeing in Southern Europe means that North Africa will be a second thought or less interest to Southern Europe?
No, I think North Africa is of extreme interest to Southern Europe regardless, and perhaps even more so because of the economic crisis, because the economic crisis is pushing, on one hand, you have more leftist policies being demanded by, we've seen, very angry populations throughout Europe, but these populist measures would probably require more, or at least push governments to enact more severe anti-migration measures. And the control of migration will be an important aspect of European-North African relations for a while to come. So I think it's even more important for Europe to establish links these days to further the agreements that were made before. We talked about Libya last time, but one of the things Gaddafi made it quite clear that if Europe does not give Libya $5 billion to help it monitor borders, it will let more people in. Simply very important. And we've got pressures from other countries in Africa that are going to be pushing for more migrants. So I think a very crucial issue for a while to come.
Yeah, I from my observations, I actually see a couple of things happening, somewhat in contradiction, but perhaps from the European mind, logical. But so there's an economic track and a human track. The human track has been, to my understanding, a pretty tough one, as sort of a return to conservatism. To your point, I think you just mentioned the fact that there might be some more tightening of immigration rules. That's the human track. It's happening at a moment where obviously there's a lot of stress around immigration, as the economies begin to go south, if you will. That's at a moment where Europe is also looking to expand its economic profile in the region. So there is this very weird, often conflicting view, that on one hand you really want to be able to compete with the Chinese, with the Americans, with the Canadians, with everyone else, in an effort to obviously gain influence in the region, in an effort obviously to also expand your economic capabilities amid a tough economic environment. But at the same time, there's this tightening of human relations, which, to me, if you really don't have the human factor, it gets very, very difficult to talk about economic growth. And I've seen countries such as Algeria, for instance, putting a lot of pressure on Europe, saying, no, there's not going to be any free trade agreement if there's no, revisiting of the human element.
Well, I think there is pressure at home in Europe to reduce migration, and there are political reasons, I think purely political reasons. Many governments perhaps don't want to lose votes, and many governments are on a brink these days because of the, the economic crisis has made governments less popular, so they're trying to control a populist aspect, whether they admit it or not. At the same time, perhaps they're pushing more, they want to go into the region itself, as part of the idea that if you invest in the region, and you create the jobs at home, you will be able to slow down the migration impetus. So I think that's why the seeming contradiction is actually, I think there is a logic that I can see. Now, I did not know that it became so difficult to get a visa, because there, especially Algerians have so many relatives in Europe.
Even if you have relatives in Europe, even if you are a mom and your daughter is now actually French, as some of the cases that I've seen, there's no guarantee to get a visa. In fact, some people have been denied simply for very subjective reasons. I've seen some of the responses back that says essentially in the response in the note that was given back to the person who was denied a visa, and here I'm talking about a 70-year-old woman, that they think there's a fear that she's going to stay there in France. And that's really outraging. I mean, you know, these are people who travel quite often, once, twice a year to visit family, you know, and they're denied willy-nilly without any particular reason. Again, this tightening might have, as you said, maybe a knee-jerk reaction, or just, in fact, a political reaction to growing, conservative movements in Europe. I wonder to what extent this is going to hurt the economic interests of Europe, as we see new players being much more aggressive with relatively good products at much lower price points that they can export into North Africa, as opposed to sort of these traditional European suppliers. So if we want to move forward, right, where, you know, should we... You know, should the two regions, North Africa and Europe, or call it the Mediterranean, should they focus exclusively on economics? Should they consider economics first, and then as progress happens, and they begin to look at the human factor? I mean, are we doomed forever to have separated worlds in the Mediterranean, where both regions, by the way, require, you know, stringent rules for access? Yeah, and I'm not sure we're going to solve this problem today. I mean, it could be certainly a long, long discussion, Alessandro. So, well, I mean, on the economic front, economically, though, I mean, there's been a substantial growth in the Gulf region. There's been pretty good growth in North Africa. And that has really sort of, you know, facilitated the entry of new players. I wonder if this retraction towards more conservatism in Europe is going to lead to longer-term losses from an economic front. North Africans and others, by the way, Africa and others, would say, hey, you know, who cares about Europe? We can actually deal now with Asia and Latin America. So let's finally talk about the economic profile of the Maghreb and North Africa in general, the Maghreb in particular, and where that region sort of sits and how it has performed in 2010, and what's the likely outcome of all of what we've seen in 2011 and beyond. And a couple of things come to mind, Alessandro, and certainly, feel free to chime in with your own thoughts. There has been clearly a resumption of interest from a variety of countries around the world. This, in many cases, these resumptions of interest, if you will, were driven by two elements or two factors, coincidentally. One is essentially the rise of the Chinese presence in the region, and to a lesser extent, the rise of the entry of new players such as Brazil, such as Russia, such as Turkey. Those are countries that have upped their interest in the region and are using seemingly different approaches and different tactics, different strategies. And the equation in their relationship with North Africa and with Africa broadly and other regions around the world are based on new elements that are very different than what the West used to use. The West used to use aid donor donor aid as a way to, you know, to influence the region, at least the poorer countries, for instance, and they used to, you know, that there are matrix being used around democracy, around the rule of law, as you know, the freedom of media as being sort of a condition for support and economic partnership, if you will. Countries like China clearly don't really, purposely don't care, because for them it's essentially a different world. It's a place that they really are not accustomed to. And so linking the political aspect into, you know, with their economic profile may not be the right strategy. The strategy for them is basically, we give you, you give us. It's a very simplified process. And those simple terms, again, from what we were hearing, is enabling, as we mentioned in an earlier podcast, enabling some real growth in like, as you pointed out, places like Mozambique and Angola and other countries. Vis-a-vis North Africa, we've seen some of the biggest, for example, infrastructure projects being handled by Chinese companies. Now, worldwide, the two biggest Chinese construction firms, are also the world's biggest construction firms. They surpassed the number one, which was a French company, and so that's creating a lot of stress in even at the industry level. They're involved in everything. I mean, you can see them in construction, you can see them in industrial complexes, you can see them as suppliers of various products, and that has sort of created an effect or reaction among sort of a traditional European and American partners, the traditional partners to North Africa, to also figure out a way to play a role there. The second factor that's sort of stimulating interest in North Africa and other regions, but in our case North Africa, it's essentially the fact that many of these Western economies are suffering themselves, and they're looking for a way to improve their economic activity by sort of stimulating more trade, more investment in these so-called emerging economies or emerging markets. This year, for instance, we've been involved in several conferences. Two of them, one was in Barcelona with the Europeans, and particularly the Spanish, and more particularly the Catalonians, which seem to be very, very keen on doing business with the region. They seem to be very much keen on increasing ties with the region amid, as you know, a pretty weak Spanish economy. And we've seen a response from the North Africans saying, yeah, we're willing to work. Let's get together. The second conference was somewhat of a competitive one, but a good one. It was sort of the, U.S. Maghreb, entrepreneurship conference in Algiers, which brought a heavy American presence in Algiers and you know, seeking ways to again increase the American presence or improve the image of the U.S. in the region through the economic door, so to speak. That is something that we're probably going to continue to see going forward. More of that sort of proactive involvement from the West, obviously at a time, as the previous podcast talked about, at a time where there's a political retraction from Europe, at least a social one, around immigration and other issues. So very interesting. And I think, you know, you mentioned the Libyan presence in UniCredit. I think that Libya, to your point, is very much unique in North Africa, because they do have, it's the only country, to my knowledge, that really has a viable, you know, forward, international-looking sovereign wealth fund. That sort of Algeria does. I mean, Algeria has, you know, a policy has been essentially to, you know, to invest domestically, and the politics there has been, and again, broadly speaking, I think that's the second point that I wanted to mention, is that, you know, that there has been this nationalist stance, something that that has stifled economic growth across, in fact, in all regions, in all the countries of the region. If you look at you know, the if you look at the you know, where North Africa stands as a place where, you know, where you do business, with the exception of Tunisia, that is ranked 55th over 180 plus countries, everyone else is above 100, and that's was sort of the dramatic aspect of 2010, 29, and in prior to that, and who knows whether this is going to, it's going to change. I don't think it will change, but clearly I think it's impossible. It's very, very difficult to run a business in North Africa. There are resources. There are human skills or professional skills that can be used to sort of improve an industry, a market, a sector, or a country, or an economy. But yet there is a political system that systematically is itself source of obstacles and hurdles. I think the drama, to me, from my perspective as a person who follows the region, is a lot less about these particular policy-specific elements as much as about deconstructing and destroying the administrative process that currently is absolutely nasty. That, you know, I'm going to use this word. The paper trail that one has to go through to for anything is absolutely stunning. And what happens is in all of these countries, essentially all of them, it has created an apparatus, an entire economy of bureaucrats. And because of the paper trail is so difficult that it enables the emergence of the bribery system.
Of course.
Where anytime you want a document, you have to pay someone to speed up the process. Reasons why essentially we continue to have, you know, illegal immigration, because people just don't have the ability to work. They don't have the ability to create their own business. They don't have the ability to create wealth and move on in their lives. I really, you know, as much as we certainly can talk for a long time about corruption at the very high level, I think that, I think the regimes have definitely a stake in ensuring that something moves, and it's not happening. I don't really know what will take. I think we need, you know, different blood, different types of leaders, and maybe it's a discussion that we might again have next year. For our listeners, thank you for staying with us all this, all these hours listening to our interesting discussion. Again, for you to know that it's been unscripted, and that was the fun part of that. Also, be aware that Alessandro is going to be available for those of you who are in Southern Europe for briefings. If you're interested in having a discussion on, as a company or as a government, where things stand, where you are, and where you should be going vis-a-vis North Africa, by the way, vis-a-vis Africa, vis-a-vis the Middle East as well, Alessandro is actually a terrific analyst to talk to. If you need to reach him, just simply go to our website, north-africa.com. In the contact area, send us a note, and we will forward that to him. Meanwhile, if you are also a company that's looking to learn about the region, expand in the region, we have both the expertise on the ground and in various countries around the world. We can certainly help you. We have a consulting unit called the North Africa Advisors, and we'd be glad to support any initiatives that you may have in the region. And with that, thank you for listening to us, and hope to speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
This was the North Africa Journal podcast. Thank you for listening.